Mark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree that it's great that the industry has come up with this idea, and I think it shows some promise, but I'm just kind of curious. Gene isn't here to answer the question. Maybe Peter can. Is a retroactively punitive measure like this legal? I don't.
Peter?
You raised the issue I was going to raise. We've used very similar provisions with almost all of the frameworks we've done. They've just never had a penalty like this applied to them, or an extra penalty applied to them. Management-wise, and this approach is obviously very sensible and seems like a very good way to go. It's just, I think between now or after this meeting, I think we would have to go back and have some discussions about the legality of the penalty end of it. We have, even with putting the payback provisions in place that we have had legal questions raised. We've overcome those through the process, through our internal process. So it's just something we'll need to look into. Gene isn't here. He's out in, he's over in Russia right now, so he couldn't be here to answer that. But it is something we would like to look into a little further and make sure that we're on solid ground when we have the council meeting.
I think Drew's anxious to comment.
Thank you. Yeah, in Gene's absence. No one could ever replace Gene. As you mentioned, there is precedent for this. For instance, last go-around, in the interim measures, there was a higher allocation of days at sea than the pending framework, and then the framework said if you take more, you're going to pay them directly back. So that, you know, very comparable to what we're talking about here. The extra that Peter was talking about, the extra penalty, it's not really an extra penalty because what they're allocated under the interim measures is two 18,000-pound trips or 36,000 pounds. If you just say you don't get your access area trips, well, you're only possibly potentially going to be allocated 26,000 pounds or two 13,000 pounds trips. So if I'm doing the math, I'm losing 26, but gaining 10, I'm coming out ahead 10,000 pounds. And so that's where the 10 days at sea was put in there to say, no, you're really going to lose all that poundage and then some so that you don't do it. And that's why the days at sea were added. It was to really say, you can't come out ahead making this maneuver. And plus, the cost of that mortality you're going to cause and the future growth you're going to take away from the rest of the industry, that's why the 10 days at sea isn't really an extra, but it's actually a very equitable solution to that. And also just a note, if this goes forward, that any permit letter should be translated into Spanish, Portuguese, and Vietnamese online, too, because a lot of the crew, that's the diversity we have within the fleet. So.
Okay, well, I'm comfortable with where we're at for today, and clearly if Gene wants to add any comments to it, we can have that discussion next week if we need to. Any other comments or questions from the public? Ron?
Yeah, so just quickly, in the rationale, I don't think one should use the term penalty. The rationale, it's a resource-neutral approach based on growth and mortality and everything else.
Okay, thanks for that. Any other comments or questions from the committee before we vote on the motion? Mark?
Looking at this motion and then the next one, motion number 9, where we're going to be contemplating an emergency action, I'm just curious as to whether the emergency action might include the specifications that we're intending to implement for 2013, rather than simply close the area until the framework 24 is implemented. Why not just revise the specifications in the emergency action? Then you don't have to deal with the repercussions of delayed opening for elephant trunk or the possibilities that could occur that would make you want to implement the provisions from motion 6. So.
Well, I mean, it, It's an interesting question, and certainly to move in that direction would be to implement the entire framework through emergency action versus the normal regulatory process. And emergency actions are different, and generally we try to keep them issue-specific and small, but, I mean, I guess I'd turn to the regional office. I don't have the answer to that question.
Well, I mean, the emergency action could simply implement the measures we're looking at for fishing year 2013, not the full range all the way out to 2015.
I see what you mean. I guess I'd turn. No, I think he's talking about our spec package, maybe less some of the all areas, yeah. So, Peter?
Yeah, I think that would certainly... I think it would certainly add some challenges to defining the reasons for the emergency action in terms of the whole setting the whole specifications in place through emergency. There are timing concerns as well. I mean, it depends on if you wanted the emergency action done. If it were to start on March 1st, that would be okay because you could get a year out of it. But if you wanted it earlier to affect the elephant trunk sooner, you wouldn't be able to make those measures in place for the entire 2013 fishing year. You'd have to do them through follow-up through the framework anyway. I'm just not sure. It's something that, again, setting the entire set of specifications in place by emergency action, I'm not sure that's something that really rises to or meets the way that emergency actions were set up and intended in the Act.
Just a quick follow-up, Peter. I mean, we certainly have requested emergency actions for this FMP a number of times. Did this question come up in the past? Do you recall it?
I don't remember it specifically for that we do an emergency to do this kind of thing. We have done, you know, thinking back with Amendment 10, we did implement, I believe it was an emergency action to continue the Hudson Canyon access area until Amendment 10 was implemented. So we've done kind of similar things, but not the whole set of specifications.
Do you think that you all might just contemplate the concept of, you know, not the entire framework, but just the spec package, and maybe provide more feedback next week on that? Or,
I mean, we can. The one thing, the concept of the framework action, I mean, the concept of the emergency action is also so that we put in place measures that the council couldn't otherwise do in a timely manner. So we're off by a couple months. Is that, you know, that's part of the decision that has to be made as to whether an emergency action would make sense to do in this case. I mean, my gut reaction is it's not something that would be supported through an emergency action, but that's just my gut feel on it based on conversations we've had in the office about emergency actions and different things we've done.
Mark?
Well, I mean, couldn't you make the argument that the 2013 default measures with regard to access areas create an unforeseen problem by virtue of the areas chosen and the number of trips to those areas, and that the access areas that we voted on earlier, those trips for 2013, are a more reasonable solution to the problem created by that unforeseen problem than, I mean, couldn't the emergency action be a solution?
Well, keep in mind that the access area that you're really concerned about in this situation is the Hudson Canyon. The groundfish access areas don't open until June 15th, so the council action should be able to address that. Delmarva access area is closed. Assuming the emergency action is extended, that's closed through May 13th. So, again, really the only situation that the only area that really seems to rise to the need to take action would be the Hudson Canyon area, because it's the only area that opens on March 1st with the wrong allocation.
Peter Hughes.
Thank you and good morning. I'm on the AP, and we discussed this at length yesterday. We had actually had discussions about what Mark was just saying, combining the two. You know, one of the things that we have to remember is we're very poor at looking into our crystal balls at that second year. And last year we had an emergency action to shut down Delmarva. The year prior to that we had an emergency action to shut down Nantucket Lightship to prevent trips from being taken. We have a big area in the elephant trunk that we need closed, and we need it closed immediately. We also have a real problem with the third year that the boats are allowed to go into Hudson Canyon early. This motion prevents boats with 18,000-pound trips from going into Hudson Canyon on March 1st, but it does allow boats that are authorized to go into Hudson Canyon with a 13,000-pound trip to go in there and take that trip. And we'd like them to go in there as early as possible from an industry standpoint, because when the framework is finally published, that's hopefully in May, the water temperatures are rising. And as those water temperatures rise, we're going to see more and more mortality on the juvenile scallops and the recruitment that's in the area. So we thought it best to try and give a large enough disincentive to vessels to prevent them from going in there, but allow an incentive for vessels that have their 13,000-pound trip, which is typically NIMS publishes by December, so people can plan and work their exchanges, you know, prior to the framework being put in place. We really want to stop the elevator ride with the juvenile scallops in the warmer months. So we wanted people to be able to fish those 13,000-pound trips in March and April and May, and not so much in June, July, August, September, when we're going to see a higher mortality rate, or could possibly see a higher mortality rate. So that's why we decided it was best to split the two. We also didn't want to get the two muddled in an emergency action that might take longer in closing the elephant trunk access area, because there are boats that are currently fishing that area, and they're catching small scallops. And once again, it's an elevator with all these juvenile scallops going up and down, and we don't want to hurt that recruitment that we're seeing in the elephant trunk area, and we want to lessen any damage that we can to an extent in the Hudson Canyon access area. So that's why we kind of split the two. So I hope that provided some clarity. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. So I'd like to come back to the motion. Is everyone around the table ready to vote on this motion? Yes? All those in favor? 4, 5, 6, 7. Against? Abstain? 1. Okay, thank you. We have one more motion from the AP. And I guess I would like Deirdre just to explain. I didn't hear the discussion on this particular motion. It is motion number 9, request NIMS implement an emergency action to close the elephant trunk using the previous boundaries until framework 24 is implemented. Could you just cover that shortly?
I think Peter mentioned it in his testimony just now, but in general, the elephant trunk is currently open. It's an open area right now under current regulations, and it would remain open as an open area under the default. So come March 1st, people could be fishing their open area days at sea in that area. While we don't expect a huge flood of people to go in there, I do understand, and the surveys would support, there are pockets of areas within Elephant Trunk that have larger scallops between all of these areas with high recruitment. And as been mentioned, the incidental mortality in that type of activity is not something that we want, and it would have, you know, detrimental impacts on that recruitment that we want to produce in the next few years. I wasn't totally clear yesterday on the anticipated timing of this type of a request. Obviously, we would, if it passes here, we would bring it to the council in September, and I don't know when the the earliest would even be for an emergency action. But as Peter mentioned, the advisors, I would imagine, you know, as soon as possible, not necessarily March 1st, even sooner if it could be done. So it is sort of one of those, a recruitment event in that area that was not foreseen and would want to be closed as soon as possible to, you know, harness that potential yield in years to come.
So just to follow up on that, Deirdre, you said that currently it's open area. It's not an access area. So if the council took our recommendation and we passed it on to the agency and they were to implement emergency action, do we need to take a separate action in the framework to recreate? So there's two parts to this.
Well, the motions you've passed already, alternative one, as well as the one the advisors brought to you, include closing that area. Yes. So as soon as Framework 24 is implemented, this area most likely will close in all the alternatives you've just considered. It's just the time between, let's just say, December 1st through May that area is fishable. I mean, people could be fishing there now. Maybe they are. I've heard some people are. So if people are fishing there now, the preference would be long-term for people not to be fishing there because we know there's really good recruitment in there. The vessels are maybe not seeing it because it's getting through the dredge, the commercial dredge, but there is a lot of very good recruitment in there that we don't want a lot of fishing activity in there. Can we wait until, you know, May when this is implemented? You know, of course, that's a great thing. We want to do that. But there will be some mortality between now and May that through emergency action would be avoided.
And the difference in why the AP put forward two motions is the fact that the first motion can affect current access areas, but because there are no boundaries currently for this one, it's a different situation. Is that, I mean, the thought process the AP had in the previous motion, you wonder, well, why couldn't you apply it to that? But I think the difference is because it's not currently an access area, it doesn't work. Is that correct?
Well, I think with the first issue, the Hudson Canyon issue, the reason not to put that potentially all through emergency action, which is what I picked up from yesterday, I might be wrong, is that the industry actually does want fishing to happen in there in March and April, just not the amount that's allocated under the default. So it's not that you'd want to, you know, close or something in that. You do want that 2013 effort to happen in March and April. I think that was the main reason they did these things separately, if I understood.
And again, I turn to Bill. Is there anything that you'd like to add, or do you think we covered it? Okay, thank you. So I'll turn to the committee. Tom?
I think, you know, our midterm strategy has to be to get away from putting ourselves or painting ourselves into these corners and having to do emergency actions year by year. But I do think that a strong case can and is being made that we need to make this change as quickly as possible. It was unforeseen for a number of reasons, and I think we're dealing with the shortcomings that we have in terms of out-year projections for access areas, and hopefully we'll be making some changes in the framework to help us better adjust this specific case. But with all that said, I do think this merits an emergency action request. So I'll bring motion 9 from the Scallop AP meeting of yesterday, requesting NIMS implement emergency action to close the Elephant Trunk access area using the previous boundaries until Framework 24 is implemented.
Do we have a second? Mark seconds the motion. Discussion on the motion. David Pierce.
Yeah, it would be helpful if Tom could provide a bit more explanation as to why we would be requesting this emergency action due to some unforeseen circumstances. I'm sure the service will want to know what was so unexpected, what was so unforeseen. You mentioned it, but if you could elaborate, that would be helpful.
Yeah, I think I would point back to what Deirdre and the PDT have determined in terms of greater than expected recruitment and a high volume of small scallops and seed in that area that would now, we have come to learn, should fishing operations proceed without emergency action, would lead to unexpected mortality. and a reduction, unforeseen reduction in long-term yield from that area. So that's what I would point to as a rationale for taking this action.
Thank you, Tom. Any other comments or questions from the committee? The public, Ron?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I fully agree with Tom's rationale. We didn't know that this recruitment would be so high. And as far as the threat, I've been out in that area now three times this summer, beginning of June, beginning of July, and last week. There was no fishing effort in there in June and July. When the scallops, if there were scallops there of harvestable size, they would be, that's the time to take them. But last week, there were four vessels fishing in there. Right on top, we were doing ROV work, right on top of the seed beds. So the destruction between now and next May or June could be significant. And that happened once before with Del Marver. So we didn't close it in time. So that's a lesson to be learned. But overriding, we have two issues that are causing all the problems and all the discussions that we've been having this morning. The first issue is the delay in implementing a framework. We should be able to implement these frameworks by March 1st, and I think the council really needs to work with NIMS to figure out how to do that. I mean, that is a fundamental problem. And a part of that problem is the lack of capability staffing to analyze this stuff. This is a $2 billion fishery. A $2 billion fishery with one person at the science center doing an analysis. Okay, and I'm sure Dietra could use some help as well. And we have a PDT that has, you know, a lot of people on it looking at protective species issues, NEPA issues, what have you. Somebody needs to get in there and figure out why we can't implement these things as planned by March 1st, or else we'll be under the same problem. I mean, I've said that now for the last 6 years in a row.
Dave Frula?
Thank you. This is it takes up something I had in mind from the discussion earlier where Ron left off. I don't want to get too far off track, but I just want to make an offer on something because it does apply with the elephant trunk. We're trying to make it so not knowing what the conservation issues are in the scallop fishery isn't an excuse, and that the problems that we see every once in a while, and a couple have come up today, that there's a way to rectify them, because that's not in anybody's interest, not in the advisor's interest. You heard Billy Wells. Drew had mentioned translating into Spanish, Portuguese, and Vietnamese, and I don't want to take that as kind of just a one-off comment. We've done that with survival fund materials when we've had, like, observer protocol information. We have some we've used translators. It's a couple $100. It's not insuperable. We're glad to work with Deirdre. You know, actually, there may be even reasons to bring the Small Business Administration in, because you have, in terms of these permit holder letters, you might be able to get some help there. There might be something good you could do around the country in terms of being able to get some of these permit holder letters, your small business analyses, out online. You could put what gets mailed out, you could put something in the bottom, one line, in three languages, which says, if you want to read this in Vietnamese, go to this website. It wouldn't be too hard. I think there's probably resources for it, and we'd be glad to help.
Thanks very much for that. That is very helpful. Any other comments or questions at the table or from the public? Everybody's good. So all those in favor of the motion? Yes, 7. Against the motion? And abstentions, 1. Thank you. I think we're going to move on. If we have any other issues relative to how to deal with default measures, we can take them up later. And if you look at our agenda, we're going to skip our 11 o'clock agenda item and move on to 11:30. We have Bill Barnhill here to discuss the recent biological opinion, and we thought we'd try to get him in before we break for lunch. So is Bill here? Oh, there he is. Would you like to? You have a presentation for us?
Deirdre was going to do that, but I was just going to be here to answer any
questions. Oh, all right. That's fine. We'll do it that way then. So, if we have questions, there he is. but we'll have Dieter do it for now.
Yep, I don't really have a very long presentation. In fact, document number 8 is a single sheet front and back summary, very brief summary of a very detailed document that I'm sure some committee members and public have come across, several hundred pages. Emily Gilbert has actually helped me make this sheet. And what we wanted to do, just to sort of close the loop, this committee and advisory panel has spent a lot of time talking about turtles in the last few years. And for the last 2 frameworks, the agency has requested that the council, through our framework process, help them basically comply with what at the time were reasonable and prudent measures. And this fishery had a very specific reasonable and prudent measure to limit fishing in the mid-Atlantic during the time which bycatch with turtles was expected. So we've done that for a few years, and as you know, people that have been on the committee, we've spent time developing measures to, in fact, you know, on purpose, directly for that purpose, help limit effort during the summer months when turtles are present to help reduce bycatch. But there has been a new biological opinion that has come out, and Emily's kind of organized this in a way, question and answers, hopefully a little easier to use, but it's a way for you to define where the biop is, and we wanted to make sure the committee was aware that a new biological opinion had been published and what it actually means, and basically give you a very quick rundown of, you know, why it was reinitiated. In general, there were 2 major reasons. There's been a lot of new sources of information that have come out about this fishery in terms of its impacts on bycatch, as well as some new information about the loggerhead species itself. So for those 2 reasons, whenever there's a lot of new sources of information available, that in and of itself could reinitiate a biological opinion. And don't forget, in Framework 23, we implemented a new dredge that is going to be required for all vessels in the mid-Atlantic starting in fishing year 2013. So that is, you know, a new management regulation that could also change the impacts of this fishery on turtles. In addition, on February 6, 2012, the endangered species listing of Atlantic sturgeon occurred. And while the interactions with the scallop fishery are very small, that still would cause a reinitiation of this biological opinion. So the agency has updated the biological opinion, looking at turtles as well as sturgeon impacts. Over, you know, hundreds of pages, they have summarized, you know, what those anticipated impacts are and a summary of the most updated information. I think just in a few bullets that have been listed here, the estimated impacts of this fishery are lower than what they used to be for a variety of reasons, but this kind of hopefully highlights the major kind of take-home things that were listed in that biological opinion. And currently, the, as I was saying, annual interactions with sturgeon are very low. I think it's actually 1, which is summarized here, one sturgeon a year. So while this is a concern for our trawl fisheries in our region, for now, the scallop fishery does not seem to be, this is not very high on our radar of things that we need to address. So the big thing that's different, too, with this biological opinion is that the agency has revised the reasonable and prudent measures. If you remember, there used to be a list of them before, and the first one was that one related to effort limits. Now, basically, 2012 and beyond, the measures themselves are, I would describe them as much more related to kind of monitoring, assessing, research type of measures, and related terms and conditions. So it's not that this issue has gone away at all. It's definitely something the agency is still responsible to investigate impacts, monitor those impacts. The only one that I thought may require some council involvement comes up on, it's number 1, but it's described under the questions on the back on page 2, basically, well, how much does the council need to be involved in this process now that that RPM has been replaced? And we're not really I'm not really sure yet exactly how much involvement, but I imagine there'll be some, at least at the PDT level, to assist the agency in basically the RPM is to monitor, I'll just read it here, to annually monitor and assess the distribution of fishing effort in the mid-Atlantic during the period of known sea turtle overlap to ensure that there are no increases of likelihood interaction. So, you know, devil in the detail kind of thing, increases compared to what? And so far, the biological opinion is looking at this in terms of dredge hours compared to the period of 2007 to 2008 is the baseline that was selected for this. So, you know, for the committee and public's interest, when the agency does these reviews, that's what it's being based upon, the dredge hours from that particular time. I'm not sure exactly the format of how this is going to go in terms of reporting back to the council when these annual reports are done, or if it's, you know, just something that'll be on a website or whatever, but I'm sure we'll hear and keep this committee informed about what these reports are looking like. And we just wanted to kind of close the loop and make sure people understood that originally we had in Framework 24 a placeholder for potential RPMs that would need to be developed in this framework as we've done in years past. But that RPM is no longer required. So basically, if I haven't already, removed all of the RPM-related placeholders that we had in the document, and we will not be having the PDT further explore those kinds of things between now and November. So if you had a chance to look at this, if you have detailed questions for Bill, he is here from the Protected Species Branch. Did I mess any of it up that should have some more clarity? Please, you know, add on to it if there's anything that I overlooked. I'd like to? A little bit? No? Okay.
Yeah, I guess just the take-home message is that this is still a non-jeopardy opinion in terms of sea turtles and Atlantic sturgeon, and that the RPMs and terms and conditions that are in place are, the onus is mostly on the agency. You know, it's our science, working with our science center, our protected resources division, kind of ensuring that, you know, gear modification, research into that continues. The reason for the RPM being modified was because we did a lot of research and found that there was a lot more bang for your buck in terms of, you know, minimizing interactions to sea turtles by doing the gear modifications versus the effort reductions. And a lot of that is explained in the biologic opinion if you want to read more. So aside from that, I think you hit the major points. So I'll be here to answer any questions during the lunch break if anybody has any. And thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Laura?
I had a question for Bill. Is there a number that you're trying to achieve without me having to read the whole biological opinion? So we see, based on the size of the scallop industry and the number of trips taken, that we interact with potentially 161 and we lose 129 turtles. Is there an acceptable number that you're targeting?
There really isn't a set level. I mean, when we do the Endangered Species Act consultation, we are just trying to determine whether jeopardy is going to occur to the, you know, continuous existence of the species. We're trying to minimize, to the extent practical, that you know, mortality is lowered. But there is no target rate. Basically, we just want to keep the industry below the take levels that we are, you know, setting at. So if they exceed that, then we have to go back and reassess, you know, the fishery.
Do you have that level, the take? I mean, I'm sorry, so do you have a number of when you set the clock, what the interaction was? What your base level was? Was it 200 turtles? Was it 170 turtles? How many turtles are we basing against?
In the previous opinion?
Yes.
It was, I think, 595 over a two-year period in the dredge fishery, and then a couple hundred. So basically, the new data that we had gotten from our science center, more recent data on interactions that indicated that the takes were a lot lower in recent years.
And one follow-up question, about how many people do you have working on a team dealing with issues like turtles?
It's pretty extensive. I mean, we have several members of the Protected Species Branch at our Science Center, at least three or four specialized in sea turtle issues. Our Section 7 staff is composed of about 10 individuals. I'm kind of the primary investigator for the scallop fishery, scallop FMP, but we deal with much of other fisheries as well, where there are turtle interactions as well. So,
I'm just curious if we're, if we've taken the interactions down from, say, a 500 level to 129. It's pretty successful, so maybe we could redirect some of that effort towards things that we discussed earlier, like getting the framework done in a timely manner. Might just be something for NIMS to consider. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But again, it's again different divisions. I know, you know, Science Center, we're dealing with protected species branch. We're also dealing with economic staff. Pete and Emily are in a different division, so that call is being made by higher-ups, but I definitely think we can have those types of conversations with the council.
Just putting it out there. Yeah. Just saying.
Sure.
Dave Frula. Mark.
Through the chair, thanks for that. One other point. On the biological opinion, in terms of the one sturgeon a year, I believe there's some urban myth that one time one scallop dredge caught a sturgeon. I don't even know if it was, you know, who knows. I have sort of two ways to look at it, and I'm not sure which way is the right one. One is it makes sense if it's even theoretically conceivable to have one sturgeon so you have an incidental take statement for one. The other is it. If you look at it and you look at the history, it also seems like protected resources just can't stand ever saying to anyone that you don't have an interaction. And I don't know which it is. I'm not quite sure how to view it, but that's my impression from the sturgeon take.
Thanks, Dave. Mark?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill?
Yes. Your name?
You made the statement that the onus is mostly on the agency, but what are the implications with regard to research priorities that the committee recommends as far as gear and bycatch research, and how does that factor into how much RSA money is directed toward those things?
I really wish I could answer that question. I can't give you all the answers right now. I do know that we are wanting continued testing and modification to the TDD, and I think a lot of RSA funds in the future and, you know, in the past couple of years have been directed towards that. Our grants division is kind of making those decisions, and we will be working with them out of the Science Center in terms of, you know, prioritizing different projects for funding. But again, the gear modifications through the TDD is probably the highest priority at this point in time.
Go ahead, Pete.
Pete, and then Deirdre.
Maybe adding a similar thing to Deirdre, but the council has control over how the RSA priorities are set. So it, you know, if it were to determine that this was, that there was a high enough importance of continuing to do gear research and continuing to do research to look at turtle interactions, the council could set priorities higher. I don't get from this that this is requiring any sort of elevated priority. It's just saying, well, you know, continue to do the research, continue to look into ways to minimize interactions. So the council could do priorities too.
I was getting more at these RPMs seem to say that NIMS must do this, NIMS must do this. So does that relieve the council somewhat of having to take on the financial burden of this kind of research or what?
I see what you're saying. The biological opinion has to direct its requirements of the action agency, which is NIMS. Even in the case of the old RPMs, those were requirements of the National Marine Fisheries Service that we asked the council to do through its framework process because it was more open and public and was just a better way of addressing that. If the council chose not to, it could have said, we don't want to do it, and we would have had to have done something. So that's why they're worded this way. We, you know, in some instances, we may ask the council if it would entertain doing some of these things.
Deirdre?
I'll just add a little bit more. When this committee and council set priorities for RSA in the last round, you set them for 2013 and 14 in the last announcement. This committee and then ultimately the council decided to take the turtle priority as a research item from high and move it down to medium. I believe the advisors had the same recommendation and the PDT as well. There was some, comments and interest from NIMS to continue it and not remove it because of these RPMs and these requirements, but it was is brought down as a priority in light of this new biological opinion and the type of RPMs that are now in it compared to before. In terms of whether people think it should go even lower than medium, of course, that's the council's, prerogative and decision to do that, and it does affect which projects ultimately get funded depending on those priorities. But it's certainly not something that's gone completely away. It's something that, as a partnership with NIMS to continue to facilitate that research, but in terms of how much weight people want to give it, that is all, as Peter said, up to the council's elevation of these different priorities. Currently, it's at medium.
Ron?
Hi, Ron Smolowitz, the designer of the sturgeon deflector dredge. The recommendation to lower the turtle priority has a significant impact. We've been working extremely closely, the scallop industry with the Science Center and in the past with the regional office. And one of the things that's come out of the RSA research and with the Science Center on this is being able to get an estimate of the turtle population for the first time ever, which is significant. And the estimate was up around 800,000 animals were on the shelf, probably the populations in the millions. So this loggerhead should probably be delisted. However, with the drop in the research priority, because we've pretty much seemed to have solved the problem, at least with the scallop fishery interaction, we're not going to be collecting the data that might help delist loggerhead turtles. And the Science Center scientists that work on this have been told that they're not going to get any budget for tags next year either. So we might go from a very strong research program where we tagged 30 turtles this year to a program where we're doing nothing next year. So just be aware that sometimes success, my personal opinion is we're dropping this too soon. We should be working on delisting this animal and doing the research necessary to do that, to avoid these type of problems. And as far as sturgeon, you're all familiar with the amount of, the research questions involving that animal.
Thanks, Ron. Mark?
Yeah, thanks, Ron. I didn't want to give the impression that I'm advocating reducing research funds, but I just wanted to understand the implications of the wording in this document.
So, in general, the implications for this process are pretty significant for those who were here at the table or members of the public. When we did our last framework, we spent, for specifications, we spent a lot of time on this particular issue. It's very complicated. The analysis that the PDT did was lengthy and complicated. So it does make our process easier, and I think we should remember, however, Ron's comments about where we're going with this in the future. So any more questions? Are everybody set with this topic? All right. This seems to be sort of a good place. It's early, but to break in our agenda before we take up, other alternatives in the framework. So it's early, but we'll eat lunch early. It's 11:45, and eating lunch around here does seem to take a little bit of extra time. Yesterday, nobody was able to be back in an hour, so we'll make it an hour and 15 minutes and hope that everyone can be back by 1:00, please.